Welcome to the fourth edition of Monadnock Paper Mill's Masters of Design series. Today, we're talking to one of the true mavericks of advertising and design, Alex Boguski. Alex is co-chairman of Crispin Porter Boguski, whose non-traditional approach to promotion has shaken the industry, causing many of the country's leading agencies to take a fresh look at what really constitutes creative. Alex has been inducted into the American Advertising Federation's Hall of Achievement and will soon join some of the legends of advertising when he is inducted into the Art Directors Hall of Fame next month. Did you ever think you'd be working on accounts like Burger King, Volkswagen, and Microsoft?
You know, Chuck Porter was friends with Pat Fallon. He went to high school with Pat Fallon.
Yeah.
So his thing to me was, and I had discovered Pat Fallon working at another agency, or discovered Fallon, and his thing was, you know, I went to high school with these guys. We could do the same thing that these guys did, you know? And I guess I kind of did buy it, right? Which, thinking back, was a ridiculous notion, but I bought into it. So I didn't so much think about what clients we'd be working on, but I thought we could do neat work and we could do good work even though we weren't in New York or L.A.
You know, I was doing a lot of research prior to this interview, looking at just your work that's out there, and also more interesting almost is the reaction to it.
Yeah,
and there's kind of three camps out there that are those who get it and love it, those that don't like it at all, and those that don't get it. And you know, it's really kind of unique in that it's very polarizing.
Very polarizing, yeah.
And is that polarization a good thing, do you think? Or
yeah, because there's not much of our work that no one's seen. You know, it's a pain. Right, and it's sometimes difficult to deal with, especially in the digital age, because you know before that, the same things would happen with a lot of good work, but you wouldn't have to read about it every day, right? So, I mean, I remember as a younger person in advertising, and the Taco Bell dogs, or a lot of things that Shiat did, that would be very polarizing, and I never got it. I'm like, it's awesome, you know, And the only work you can ever argue about is the work that you actually notice. And isn't that like the number one job of advertising? So the notion that there's this kind of safe work or even responsible work that no one sees, I just don't get that. That seems extremely irresponsible to spend, you know, $400 million and have no one see it.
Right.
So when we took over Burger King, we were on production. It was a really good example of this. We were on production, and this woman who was one of the actresses, she said, "This is really great stuff." It's like, when did Burger King start advertising? You know, well, they spent $400 million last year, and they would be unhappy to hear you say that. But it's true. A lot of advertising, you really can't comment on, and you can't like or dislike or wonder about, because you just didn't see it.
Is it? Do you ever find it tough to keep a client on board with that kind of polarization going on? I mean, in terms of on board with the idea, or do you pre-warn them? That
I think you warn them, but they're never really quite prepared for it. And it's all, you know, all of it's magnified by the digital age. You know.
Yeah.
And if you look at, you know, people don't tend to blog because they're happy, well-adjusted people, or you know, like the style. Is to be inflammatory, right? And it's actually, I think it's, even the trades are competing with blogs, and so all writing is getting more and more inflammatory, right? And I think that can be hard, but someone like Microsoft, they have such sophisticated tracking, and they've tracked everything that they've done. They look at what's happening, and they're like, oh my Lord, this is so cool. Because they are always trying to ignite some sort of conversation, but it doesn't always happen. So the more sophisticated the client is, the better. The other reason why our work does that is because we try not to do irrelevant work, right? So if you do something that's irrelevant, there's no reason to talk about it, right? But everyone talks about being relevant, but I haven't heard that many people define it. They just say we'd like to be relevant. Well, we define it really specifically as being in the conversation that pop culture is having with itself. And if you step into that conversation, the reason why it's a conversation is it's not one-sided, it's undecided. And those factors mean that you step into a debate, and you step into the debate with your brand. But that's relevance, you know. And if you want that, then that's pretty much the only place to go.
I was reading an article where Jeff Goodby said, in referring to your agency, that you've really changed what is advertising.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of an interesting analogy.
That was always the thing that if I had any goal in advertising, it would have been that. So that's awesome to hear somebody who has changed advertising say that he thinks we changed advertising. Because I never really had the kind of respect for the form that would make me just focus on the craft of it. I always saw it as more of something that was akin to culture jamming. And so I wanted to change the form. And I remember the stuff that I would respond to is, before I was in advertising, I didn't know it at the time, but there was a Honda scooter campaign that Wyden did. And I saw it, and I remember, you know, I'm 17 maybe, and I thought, wow, I didn't know advertising could be that. And then I saw the Pizza Hut work that Shiat did when they were just people eating pizza, celebrities eating pizzas and talking. And I had the same exact thought. I said, wow, I didn't know advertising could be that. So to me, that's always the, if you can get someone out there to say, I didn't know advertising could be that, that's a lot of fun.
As a result, how are you defining it these days?
Where does it, see, I don't necessarily define it. I try to just be, and sometimes people come to us and they say, you know, what's it going to be like in 5 years? Or, you know, I've gone to a lot of seminars. I've heard a lot of futurists, and I've been around long enough to realize they've been about 100% wrong about everything. So I don't try to be a futurist, but we try to think about what's possible 15 minutes from now, right? So there's some technologies converging, there's some things happening. What can we make that we couldn't make, you know, 20 minutes ago?
What does that do to the roles of more traditional avenues like print?
I don't think it changes it because I think that what can happen with print is constantly changing too. You know, there's whether it's technologies or whether it's, I don't tend to think of as any media in a unique silo or a specific silo that doesn't integrate with others, right? It's always a mix, and usually there's some way to blend the two that haven't, it hasn't happened before, and technology might make that possible. It may be just an idea that you've got, but like, didn't the new, Vanity Fair, there's like metallic ink that actually is electrified and changes what it says on, you know, this new cover they made. So, you know, that's definitely coming, and that'll change print in some really amazing ways. But My favorite advertising guy was this guy that actually Jeff Goodby helped write a book about, which was Gossage. And his whole thing was, I've always liked to interact with the consumer. So if we did TV, I would love a 1-800 number. You know, if we did print, I'd love a coupon. And that was his whole thing too, right? He would come up with these letter writing campaigns between consumers and himself, and, you know, these crazy notions, and he would have loved the digital age where it's so immediate, but you know, he did it with print. So, you know, I don't think there's anything about being interactive that's necessarily new.
Having the tools change, how does that impact how you design for it? Does it have to take a different form?
You don't have to. I don't think you necessarily have to look at it that way. Interactive design. You can't take a print approach and then put it on digital work, I don't think. To some degree you can, but you're better off finding something new. It wants to do different things. So, but I don't think you'd necessarily set off to be unique because the technology is changing. I think it's inherent to the technology. You kind of have to find the truth of the technology, and it just, you know, the design is there already.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed about looking at your work is you really blend media and creative and bend media a lot. And I was wondering, you know, a lot of agencies have their media department and they're locked away in a media floor and the creative department is separate and the creative guys come up with the concept and say, hey, media department, here it is, go implement it. I can't believe your work works that way only because they're so intertwined.
It does. It does and it doesn't. You know, we have a new, someone new who came to us in media from Fallon, and she used to say to people that the best media department in advertising is the Crispin creative department. And, you know, it was her assertion that the ideas were all coming from creative. And probably most were, right? And the reason is it sort of goes back to what gets us off creatively. And it's, we're not trying to generally work on the craft of print, or we're not working on the craft of... Because there's some agencies that do that. They take whatever the current, you know, state of the art for the craft is, and they polish that, and they make really beautiful things within that craft, right? It's just not what we do. What we do is more akin to culture jamming and more akin to our interest in business. So we're in creative because it's a very leverageable asset for business. What we're always focused on is some business goal. And even the creative people, I mean, like the senior creative people here are, most of them probably would give up advertising if they could have their own really cool business, you know, which I think is unique in a creative department. We don't have people that want to be script writers. We don't have people that wish they were in Hollywood. We have people that wish they had a business, or we have people that wish they worked for Adbusters. Like, we're probably more like Adbusters, even though Adbusters would not say that they're like us. But our thought process is more like Adbusters than it is akin to coming up with a specific perfect creative piece. And so because of that, we tend to think about media, because media is more strategic in terms of, well, how am I going to get this to as many people as possible? Because I like what I'm making, but I only like it if it affects as many people as possible. So it really puts the creative mind into the delivery.
Do you think highly polished, high production value stuff has less going for it than it used to?
I think it still works. You know, it's just there's different approaches. There was a period, and maybe we're still in it, but where we were held up as a model of a new agency, right? And I never liked that. Although I probably encouraged it at some point. But ultimately, I didn't like it because if agencies could actually be more distinct, it would be easier for clients to decide which agency I want to go with. Because, wow, this one's very different than this one. If I want that crazy stuff, I can go get that. And if I want that, I can go get that. And I think that actually both approaches can work. And there's a lot to be said for... the agencies that focus on the craft as it exists now.
Weight do you put on concept or the raw idea versus that implementation? Is it?
Probably most of the emphasis is on the raw idea. You know, I got into this business like a long time ago, enough I started shooting, you know, in the stat room, shooting stats. And then I worked as a mechanical artist, and there was only a certain amount of time you could be conceptual. And then there was a real hard stop where it's like, okay, we got 3 weeks to produce this or whatever, and we have to start today, right? Or maybe it was longer. But now the conceptual phase, when clients give us a deadline, I will generally say, let's add a week to concept and let's pull it out of production, because I think it's more important. And when you have a very focused idea, it actually speeds production, because... it's obvious what's in and what's out, and what we should do and what we shouldn't do. And the other thing is that I don't think that the creative process, and this makes clients a little crazy, and we apologize for it. I mean, at first it can make them crazy if they're not used to it, and that is that the creative process doesn't end with the beginning of the production process. There's so many great creative opportunities and epiphanies that come about through the production process. And there can sometimes be corporately a feeling that shouldn't be allowed to evolve, right? We shouldn't let the magic happen there because we bought a storyboard that looks like this or that sort of thing. And I've gotten in trouble for, you know, making things better along the way. And you know, I've had conversations where I've said, okay, we can definitely create a process where things don't change, but here's what you're leaving, you know, on the table. And do you really want to make that sacrifice? And I think ultimately people realize, okay, what this is going to mean is I'm going to have a couple nights where I'm looking at stuff that is a little different, and I'm going to have some, you know, nail-biting moments. But in the end, we're going to make a better product. So they buy off on it. I've never had anyone say, yes, let's stop that whole creative production.
Let's not improve it.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of your ideas, the client's got to be involved in the implementation too, I would think.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we do say to clients, it's a little harder working with CPB than other agencies. You know, you're going to work a little harder, and you know, we apologize for that.
What advice would you give an art director coming to work for you?
My advice would be to learn how to work well, right? People come and they try to work hard without knowing how to, without pulsing their efforts, without doing the thing. You know, athletes know how to get the most out of their bodies, but people who work in mental endeavors aren't really trained on how to get the most out of their brains, and they tend to start sprinting and never stop sprinting. And it's just like athletics. Pretty soon you're going nowhere, and people who are being a little bit more cagey about their efforts are blowing by you, right? And you're giving it everything you got, but you're crawling eventually. And so understanding how to get a lot out of your intellect, listen to your head. You know, it kind of knows, right? It doesn't take a lot. We noticed that at the beginning of meetings, we're always spending, we'll have something really heavy and horrible to talk about or hard that's given us fits, but we'll spend 10 minutes just talking about dumb stuff, right? Bodily fluids or whatever. And I think that's a lot like warming up, right? So before you get to this like 500-pound clean and jerk, you want to warm up a little bit. And those sorts of tactics are something that I would encourage people to start to find out for themselves how they can get more out of their brain. Don't try to do work that I like, because you'll never know, right? You got to do work that thrills you. And if you do work that thrills you and it doesn't thrill me, you're just in the wrong place. It's not that there's something wrong with your work. I've been in places where I did work that was thrilling me and not them.
I think we all have.
Yeah, this is when I was really young, and they gave me really good explanations for why my work sucked. And I thought, I will never be smart enough for advertising. Like, you just have to be so smart for this gig, right? And then I met Chuck Porter, and I did the same thing for him, and he's like, you're a genius. And so, you know, it's really important finding the people that appreciate and like the same things you like.
Do you have a formal process for idea development, or do you just...
Well, we're very strategic, so we need real tensions within culture, right? We need leverageable tensions in culture around the product or the service that we're talking about. And so finding those is not always an easy process, because it's very difficult to look at your own culture and understand it, right? We think it's perfect. We always think our culture is perfect and right and correct. And so that's the biggest part of our process working when it works or doesn't work, is to do that. After that, we have found that we have great briefs now. And that's almost impossible to even imagine, because the brief has been that thing that, you know, all creatives throw away for the longest time. And because of the tension in our briefs, they're very simple. They're three parts, basically three sentences, and it inspires a lot of thought. And so the only other part of our process is to convince people to have faith in the creative process, because it's never failed us yet. Part of keeping the faith is knowing that your role isn't to be a superstar. That's my role. Everybody's role is just, if you just shove it forward a little bit, this process works. we're very much a team process, not a superstar process.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's always hardest to brand yourself.
Yeah.
What does the Crispin Porter and Bogusky's brand stand for?
It's funny because, you know, agencies never have any of the things that we sell to. Like, we don't have campaigns, you know. We don't generally do advertising campaigns. We don't have taglines. We don't have any of the stuff that we use. We do have a tagline that we don't use, but it's our tagline. Our tagline is, we never learn. And it doesn't mean anything to anyone except us. And what it means is that ignorance that we bring to something is the strength to look at something new and fresh and find the cultural truths that wouldn't be apparent once you're an expert in something. We're also sometimes defined as turnaround experts, you know. We're kind of that call you make when things get really bad. You know, you've got a serious problem. And that's fun. You know, we grew up having really small brands and underdog brands, and now that's not the case. We don't really work for underdog brands, but we do. We are the people you call when you've got a serious challenge. And I really like that, because being scrappy and having real problems is more fun creatively, mm-hmm. right? You sometimes have more license, but you certainly have more license to come up with something that could potentially be powerful.
When you look at competitive work out there, and particularly print, what do you consider or look for as good print?
I think that when you can get one of those really consistent campaigns, like an Absolute or something like that, like, that's gold, and those are things not to mess with, and just keep innovating and doing wonderful work. And that's probably, in my mind, the gold standard of print, is when you can just, you know, have that singular aesthetic. But there's, you know, the other thing that I obviously enjoy is I enjoy things that are interactive. So, you know, a lot of the mini work was about not looking at print as print, which is what we try, but looking at magazines as distribution, so that they could hold anything, right? And I think that's a good way to look at the page too. Is the page isn't, it's not a print ad, it's a page, right? And the page can hold anything you want, not anything you want, but. But anything within the spectrum of ink and actually now some other kind of sticky stuff, smelly stuff, you know, there's not a lot of limit. Usually when print impresses me, it came at it from that point of view.
Do you think consumers have become more jaded towards advertising in general since you started in the business?
It's a complicated relationship that consumers have with it, and it keeps getting more complicated now that they have more participation in it too, right? But consumers actually are much more willing to play rough than generally brands are, right? Consumers, when even things they like, it's difficult to determine by their behavior that they like it. I always talk about how I would be in the car with my friends and like, where do you want to go eat? And we'd say, well, let's go to Taco Hell, you know? And you'd be going there, but you'd call it Taco Hell, right? Now, if you heard me blog on Taco Hell, you might think I don't like Taco Hell. But in fact, I was a big fan of Taco Hell, right?
Right.
So the consumer relationship with brands is very different than what a brand manager might wish it would be, or, you know, and uses different language and attitudes than what a brand manager might wish it would be. But it doesn't mean it's not good and it's not valuable to them.
Has the new emphasis on sustainability and eco-friendliness impacted how you guys think about concepts or ideas?
Yeah, probably a little bit more in terms of our business. I mean, you know, we look at what we do. We're lucky that we work in a business that's fairly low impact. You know, paper is a place where we have a decent impact, and so we definitely have looked at using more recyclable papers and even things like binders. We used to use those plastic binders where you slip a page into them, and we've gone and they would make us crazy. They've made me crazy, those binders. And we've gone to a recycled cardboard binder. And there was a certain tension where people were like, well, how do we customize them? And I'm like, we don't. You know, it's like, but it's okay. You know, and we've done things like, we get half our energy here from wind energy, from wind credits and things like that. So there's, I think the industry is thinking about it.
What client that you don't have today would you most like to have?
It's been a long time since I've thought about that, because we used to make these lists of who we'd like to have for a client, and we'd do mailers or we'd do outreach. And you know, generally when you do that, I believe that it's good to have outreach and you do get business that comes in, but it never comes exactly. It's not one-to-one. It's not like we talk to them and now they want. The things that would come back were always more interesting than anything on our list. So you just, after a while, you realize the grand plan for you is more interesting than what you're actually coming up with. And so I'm just always really pleasantly surprised by the people who call and you're like, I've never even thought of that. So awesome.
When are you having the most fun?
When am I having the most fun? That's a good question. I have the most fun when I have when I get to I think supposedly your brain changes in your mid-40s. This is what I've read, and it's actually true for me. I've never given two shits about mentoring. You know, could not care less, and just hated teaching, didn't want any part of it, and pretty much was all about me. But in the last couple years, I really, really enjoy trying to pass on some of the stuff that you've learned. And so what I probably still enjoy most, though, is when I'm able to have the genesis for an idea and then work it through, you know, people. And have them make it better and take ownership of it and see it through and learn about, go into places that would have been scary for them to go into, you know, meetings that would have been scary for them, or, you know, situations that would have been scary for them, you know, manage celebrities that would have been scary for them. That's what I get the most joy out of now.
If you could start from scratch and rework a past campaign, which one would it be?
I don't know if I would. I sort of have a combination of delight and humiliation with everything that I've ever done. So I'd rework them all, and I wouldn't, but at the same time, I wouldn't want to look back, and so I wouldn't rework any of them. Yeah.
What was your favorite one?
Don't really have a favorite. You know, we don't have like a gallery section in the agency. We don't have any place where we put up work other than if people want to put it up in their offices. But philosophically, we've always thought that allows you to rest on your laurels a little bit. And my hope is whatever's on my desk is the thing that I'm most excited about and potentially, you know, is one of the most exciting things I've done in my career. You know, and I'm lucky, you know, like right now, when we leave here, I'm going to a meeting and we're talking about something that's one of the most exciting things, you know, it'd be way up there. So I think that doesn't happen if you start to hold on to or try to create value for past experiences. You know, it's always just what's happening now is the only thing that's got value.
The Masters of Design series is brought to you by Monadnock Paper, who reminds you that great work deserves great paper. Monadnock Paper. And be sure and visit www.mpm.com for future installments of the Masters of Design series. I'm David Lennox, and on behalf of Monadnock Paper, I'd like to thank you for listening.